there are opportunities in life for gaining knowledge and experience.
So let's have a conversation.
Okay. What would you like to have a conversation about?
Welcome to the podcast. This is the 50th episode, and we have returned from Belgium. We survived the live show last week. Well, last time. And now we're going to scale it back, do as we usually do, and talk about a horror film.
Yeah, we're going Hereditary. Old school today.
Yes, yeah. We are going old school. We just saw what the future might bring last time, and now we're back to the old ways.
It's going
to
be interesting, the future of this thing. Yeah.
Yes. We definitely got some ideas, or at least I got some ideas for how we can improve the recording situation.
Yeah.
but it's a little bit more challenging when we're not like together.
Yeah. Not 50. It's a big
50
round number, isn't it?
Yes. It's almost 2 years since we started this thing.
Yeah.
And we keep on going.
Yeah.
Every other week. Bi-weekly.
It's a sense of pride, like 50 times.
Yeah.
Not bad at all.
No.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yay. Well done us. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And this time we actually haven't gotten a summer break. We just powered through and are continuing. And we don't really have any plans of stopping.
No.
So actually, this would be the third season of the show, right? After the live show for like the summer?
Yeah, so the live show would be like the end of a season, and then this would be the first.
Yeah. So, welcome to the third season of the podcast.
Welcome to the third season.
What are you drinking today?
I am drinking, I tried to rehearse this before, Weihenstephaner from Bavaria, and they call themselves the world's oldest brewery. Hefe, Weissbier, Bavarian style. Premium Bavaricum, 5.5.
Okay.
So it's half a liter. I'm going to need it, you know?
Yeah.
So she'll just do my thing here?
Please do. You've been warming up today, I hear.
I had a whole garden or two. Just, you know, being fabulous downtown Reykjavik with all the tourists. You barely hear Icelandic spoken there anymore.
No.
So, I know. I did not hear anyone speak Icelandic today. So, down there. But it was good.
That's a little bit sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did you go? Which cafe?
It's called... Name drop a few. Public House.
Public House? Yes. Yeah.
They have some good stuff. Then they have whole garden and proper glasses and everything.
Nice.
On tap. It's
Yeah,
it's a good place. But yeah, okay. I'm still on my summer holidays from work, so I can do that on a Tuesday at 3 p.m., you know.
Such a nice thing to be able to do.
let me just take a sip of this.
Yeah. And he's drinking. We can hear it, how he's like slurping it up.
Yeah. And, I think I've had this before, but it's refreshing. It's good.
We're getting there.
Yeah.
Where we're repeating ourselves.
Sure. Sure.
A little bit.
That
well,
doesn't
I mean,
matter.
You repeat yourself every week.
Constantly, yes.
Constantly. But, yeah.
There you go. So... What about yourself?
I am going very standard, I would say. This is a Tuborg.
It's back to basics for you.
It's a green Tuborg Pilsner.
Okay.
You see, it says Pilsner on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pilsners in this country are 4.6%.
All right.
So there you go.
Is this what they call Tuborg Classic or?
No, that's the one called Tuborg Classic. This one is called Tuborg Pilsner.
Okay.
The classic is a little bit darker.
All right.
It's a little bit like brown. And, yeah.
I'm only asking because my wife had one today.
Okay.
Tuborg Classic.
A classic.
Yeah.
Okay.
She kind of likes
and
it.
And she was, it's inoffensive.
It's basic.
You know, it's basic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It works.
This is a can, by the way. So you'll be hearing a fizz.
Okay.
Now
let's go. Nice.
There you go.
And now the pouring.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm usually pouring this into a glass. I probably usually drink it out of the can.
So it's not really that fancy in your eyes.
Not really. No. It's one of these that you would get in a six pack for a party or something.
All right.
Just to have something to drink.
Yeah.
But a shout out to Elin, who ran out and got this before we had to record because I forgot to get beer this time.
She is such a trooper.
She is a trooper.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
By the way, I was listening to our show from last time and in the car with Shep. And I mentioned that the girls both fell asleep over the Belgian film.
Uh-huh.
And she told me that they had both said at the same time listening to that, that we still liked it. We were just tired. Yeah.
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 Well, they were. I was tired too. I also liked it. Yeah.
And only me, the oldest, by far,
just
stayed awake.
Through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You did. I'm going to rewatch that movie. The movie we were talking about last time was
Good.
The Unknown Girl.
The Unknown Girl, yeah.
Yeah.
But moving on, how's the weather there in Denmark?
Yeah, now that we're coming from the live show where we were complaining about the heat, we have returned, Elin and I and Raskva, to Denmark, and it is almost just as hot. It's a tiny bit less hot, but it's closer to the sea, so it's a bit more humid. It's still quite, like, I would like to get a little bit of the Icelandic summer right now. I'll tell you that.
Oh, let me just tell you that when we got home on Saturday, we just were so happy with getting back to just the regular Icelandic shitty weather.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. It was like maybe 14 degrees and raining and windy.
Yeah.
But it was like, oh my God, I missed this.
Yeah. Yeah, just you know, put on a sweater and not be sweating all the time. it's just great sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I know that you shouldn't be but, you know, I'm not for this hot weather for such a long time.
No.
At least.
But it's good to be home as well, isn't it?
It is really good to be home. It was a great time we had in Belgium.
Yeah.
It was fun hanging out together. It's also fun getting back home, but it's just, I mean, we just got back and now, like, normal life is hitting us, you know, back to work.
Yeah.
Raskva in daycare.
Yeah, me and Shep have another week of holiday. We're going to the Vestmon Islands for that big festival.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a house there that we can stay in for a week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's big thing coming up, going tomorrow. So go to Þjóðhátíð.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, music festival.
It's a family music, kids getting drunk festival.
Mm-hmm.
With about, I would say, I mean, the weather forecast is good, so I would suspect there will be at least 20,000 people there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's quite good.
It is good. I've been 10 times. Shep.
Okay.
Who has family ties to the Vestmon Islands in both her, both her grandpas, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But she's never been. To this festival,
to the festival.
Yeah.
No.
People in Reykjavik kind of turn their nose at this, you know?
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of the city versus the rest of the country kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's many people who turn their nose at this also, and just think,
Yeah.
But not so. But you gotta try it, and it's kind of cool.
I've seen that Paul Oscar is there quite often.
Yeah, it's not really about the musicians. There's something going on in that valley. It's just Like it's difficult to put into words, but
a lot of alcohol.
A lot of alcohol, yes. But yeah. It, also just family folks like us. They're okay. Gonna be like presumably who's two.
Yeah.
And I think it's gonna be great.
Yeah.
And yeah, sure all kinds. Will. There's some kind of a, I don't know, some kind of feeling at that place. Mm-hmm. I loved it every time I went.
Okay. Something I should try out one day.
You should go.
Maybe next year.
Yeah, I'm thinking. I'm thinking Shep, who has never even thought about going. Mm-hmm. She's gonna feel differently on Sunday night when the big thing is happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
I'm looking forward to hearing about that.
Yeah.
Next time.
But we have some horror today. We have. As a main event, we have Hereditary.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of buzz around that.
Much hyped.
Yeah, much movie. Hyped. Yeah, new horror film.
By, what's his name?
Ari Aster. Yeah.
Ari Aster. I think he's from New York.
All right.
But he does have a producer who is called Lars Knudsen. Which sounds extremely Danish.
Yes.
Lars
Knudsen? Really?
Yeah, Lars Knudsen.
Nice.
And this movie was a Lars Knudsen production.
Ooh.
We'll go into that a little bit later, but...
The Witch. He produced The Witch.
Yeah. So now we're doing some research.
All my research. We go.
But it doesn't seem like he is Danish, or
well, I'm sure he
Nordic.
has some roots.
Yeah, he does. But his Wikipedia page doesn't say anything. Nobody knows where he's born, how old he is. Mm. It's just a guy called Lars Knudsen,
mm-hmm.
or Lars Knudsen.
It's just cooler, and it's just a cool name to be a Knudsen, isn't it?
Yeah, Knudsen.
Knudsen.
Yeah.
All right. But before we do Hereditary, we decided to do something old horror.
Yeah, yeah. We were planning this show in Belgium, and looking through Filmstruck down there, we were excited about Wes Craven's first movie,
mm-hmm.
The Last House on the Left, and thought, hey, I mean, that must be right up our alley as a companion to Hereditary, because you know the master of horror,
mm-hmm.
first movie must show great promise, right?
You would think so, and yeah. I guess we will see how much promise he did show. But just one thing: have you been watching anything else since we recorded last time?
Well, Finnish Glow. Again,
with Elin,
because I mean, I made her watch it again. So it, and I always find it fun to rewatch something with someone else and see how they react to certain scenes that you were laughing or crying or feeling something special about. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, we had a lot of fun with that.
As it happens, I was just finishing episode 9, and it's really fresh, and.
Got something to say about that?
Yeah, Bash Howard's boyfriend dying, it appears.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert?
Yes.
A little bit?
Yes, but hasn't everybody seen Glow, really?
Probably.
Anyway, hopefully. That big thing in the end.
It's a big thing.
It was a good episode. There was some tension.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a totally different issue coming up. Which is AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And it begs the question, does Bash Howard have AIDS? They seem to have been really close.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if they were close in that way, but it certainly appears they were.
It's insinuated a bit. Yeah.
A lot, actually, but...
Yes.
I don't know. It was a kind of a cliffhanger. I'm looking forward to watching the last one, maybe tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should watch it. Yeah. You should finish it, get it over with, and look forward to that third season that hasn't been announced yet.
Hopefully they will do a third season.
Yeah, we finished it the other day, yeah. And then Aileen was like, ah, okay, then we can watch the third one. I was like, this is it, you know? There's no more glow right now. And she got a little bit angry at me because for some reason she felt like I had said we had three seasons to finish. And then she got really sad that she couldn't spend more time with these characters.
Wow. Angry, sad, a whole lot of feelings there.
Yeah, a whole lot of feelings. Yes, yeah. I mean, glow can evoke those feelings. Yeah.
Yeah, there was like this tension also between Ruth and Marc Maron's character there in that episode.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it took a weird turn there at the end. Yeah. And all kinds of turns.
Yeah.
But it was exciting.
It's exciting. Yeah. 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 I really like, what did you say, Marc Maron?
Yeah. Yeah.
Character. I think he's a very, very good, well-written character.
I think so too. And I think having been listening to WTF, kind of a couple of shows.
His podcast.
Yeah. Which is really good. And I just think it might be he's playing himself a little bit.
Yeah?
A little bit, you know?
Yeah, just because
he's funny and he's all that.
He's like a straight shooter. Like, he says what he means in the show, at least. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's a little bit brash somehow.
Yes.
But it's true, though. Mm-hmm. I love the way you can see how he's been in this Hollywood business for such a long time and just doesn't want to deal with that kind of bullshit. You know, mm-hmm. Still he has to work within those frames anyway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
That's a good podcast.
Is it? Yeah. WTF.
WTF.
What the frick? Yes.
Anyway, so I think it might be time to do a little riffing about The Last House on the Left.
Oh, yes. Please. So, Aileen and Shep excuse themselves after, what, 15 minutes?
Maybe closer to 20? 30. Yeah, Aileen was a little 30? Bit. Yeah, maybe 20.
She was a little bit earlier. Something like that. Yeah, and I could feel it on her from the beginning that this is not going to fly.
But this is more like film history class type of
it
thing.
It is, but you know, Aileen doesn't want to watch anything prior to her birth year.
You shouldn't say that out loud to people. I mean, it's just I love Aileen, but really?
Like, about saying that?
Yeah, it's I don't get that.
No.
I actually prefer something that was done before me.
Yeah. 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, it's not something she really lives by. She has realized that that there are good things before. It's just, yeah. Well,
we should make her watch Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Yeah.
Maybe one night.
I have not seen it yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's a creature feature, right? In a way.
Creature feature?
Yeah.
What's that?
Like, it's a creature, you know? I mean,
whoa.
It's an empire.
No, and, not the cabinet.
No.
It's
a zombie thing.
It's not a zombie. It was kind of a zombie. I forget what the word is used. He's like sleeping.
Living dead.
Some kind of that, yes. Mm-hmm. But the whole expressionistic design, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
It's 1922, so... You should go and watch that.
Well, we decided to watch a movie from, what, 72?
Yes, 1972.
Wes Craven, which is an exploitation film with well, quite a few nude scenes seem to be nude just in order to be nude, have nudity.
Were there so many? There are a few.
Two, three thing, yeah.
But scenes. nothing really.
No.
That would be considered nude today, I would say. Not really.
No. No. And then a really, like, accompanied?
Okay.
This is almost like the live show. Accompanied?
Accompanied?
Well, followed by a lot of weird music.
That yeah, that's a
we
whole...
actually did enjoy.
Yeah.
But it just didn't fit the film.
Or did it?
Or did it?
Mm.
Do you feel like it fit it?
Well, I gave it 1.5 out of 5. Because let's just say it out loud. It's crap. Absolute crap, this film. It's just bad.
Then again, it took more to make low-budget films back in the day.
Absolutely. You know? $87,000 in 1972 is just... on a shoestring.
So you have to try. Yeah. So you have to look past all the glaring flaws, like in like out of sync lip movements and like
That thing. I didn't even notice that stuff. That didn't bother me. The sound did not bother me at all. I mean, you noticed immediately that it was dubbed.
Yeah.
Many of the scenes. Not every scene, but many of the scenes.
Yeah.
That's okay. I didn't. That didn't bother me, but. What bothered me most was, and this is Wes Craven, written by and directed, is the horrible, terrible acting, and the script was just awful.
Yeah. It's just this revenge thing that, like, you wanted to, well, see some people do horrible things to other people, and you wanted revenge.
Does low budget excuse a bad, really, really bad script? Does it excuse that? I mean, money is used on many things, you know, sets and whatever, all kinds of stuff. But the script, I mean, you need time. Maybe you need an additional head, but it was just so bad.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And I don't think there was any real redeeming thing in it. Looking through Letterboxd also, you can see that many of the ratings are very, very low. But there are also some that feel like this has this cult status and it's doing something more than what, like, the naked eye can see, you know. I'm not quite there. Like, I have no special feelings to this movie. It just seems like a low budget old film that tried like some guys were trying to have fun, basically.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a more hardcore. It was like in fashion.
Yeah,
low budget fashion back then. This hardcore. When the teenagers would say, yeah, they did this, they really killed these people or something like that. But it wasn't, they changed it up.
It really didn't seem like they killed anyone.
No, they changed it.
Yeah.
Before they filmed it.
Yeah.
From that to this softer version of that, of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it just has this horrible low-budget porn feeling to it.
Yeah,
the acting.
It's the bad audio. It is really the bad audio. It comes down to most of the time.
At least.
But also the lines and
the direction.
They're
just
talking.
Not there.
They're talking about her breasts, like the main character's breasts in the first scene. Like her parents and her are talking about that.
That was some from some porn film from the era.
Yes, it's so weird. And then we were talking a little bit while watching this movie, even though you shouldn't do that, about like why it would have this cult status. And then that scene comes up with the mother who seduces one of the killers and bites off his penis.
It seems like she did that, yes. And
yeah. And then went to the water to spit it out or drink water or wash yourself, but you didn't see anything, you know?
Yeah, but it has a lot of shock value, and that's basically mm-hmm. all this film has, aside from maybe the music. That's shock yeah. value, and it's because of this, it got like all kinds of things thrown at it, like banned in theaters and
yeah. You're not allowed to do this kind of stuff.
No.
But then again, at this time in Denmark, we had the whole free sex wave with all the farce comedies.
Yeah.
Where like all popular actors of the time were in these kind of weird softcore movies with like nudity, intercourses, all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
It's weird. And it was just in the cinemas. You can buy them like in regular movie stores now. There's just like completely normal stuff. That was in the 70s. Same time where this was banned. Everywhere.
That is strange.
That is very strange.
But I believe this is the cult status of this film. It's the censorship thing.
It tends to do that to movies. Like once mm-hmm. a movie gets censored, people seek it out.
Yeah, and it gains some following because of that. This is mm-hmm. why, but there's nothing else much here to report.
No.
I just think the directing and the writing was just awful. That's mm-hmm. how I feel.
Yes.
Although maybe you can respect that the just getting it out there, just doing it on a shoestring budget at the time. It's
I would have thought there was more quality behind, or at least that you could see the ideas were actually good. They just weren't. So that was a great warm up for Hereditary.
Just for the music, this style of having it like contrasting the mood and the scenes, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Kind of like that.
Yeah,
I kind of respect that. And of course, there is some kind of honesty about this film. That is somehow honest in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just in his awfulness, you know, maybe. But.
I got flashes to The Room a few
little
times.
Little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
So I don't think that's a great thing. about the music, there was one scene that stood out to me with one of the main characters running through the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And the soundtrack actually had some heart pounding like noises. It didn't work, but I liked what they were trying to do.
There you go. That's your half a star.
Yeah, that's my half star. Half star. Okay. Yeah. Good. So do you have anything else to add, or should we talk about Ari Aster's new film?
Okay, let's do Hereditary.
Come on, Peter. Here's your suit.
It's heartening to see so many strange new faces here today. I know my mom would be very touched and probably a little suspicious. My mother was a very secretive and private woman.
Who's gonna take care of me when you die?
She wasn't altogether there. At the end.
That was a clip from Hereditary, Ari Aster's new film, his feature debut, starring Toni Collette and Gabriel Byrne, Alex Wolff, Millie Shapiro, and Anne Dowd. A horror film, we should say, although
I guess
horror is a bit stretching it a bit, but it's really suspenseful, and it covers this family, which is apparently in the family business of evil, as it says on the poster. And
does it say that on the poster?
Yeah, it does say that on the poster. Evil runs in the family.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're not spoiling anything.
No.
No.
By saying that. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
First of all, Rune, I know you went to see this alone in the theater. How was that?
It was... It's always fun going alone to this theater. Yeah.
But horror?
You tend to feel like a film critic.
Yeah.
Very much like...
I get that.
This is not a social thing.
No.
I'm just going to watch the movie.
Yeah.
I was actually a little bit afraid. Not afraid like that, but I was a little bit worried that it would be even more scary when you didn't have anyone to like mirror yourself in somehow or like be together with in the cinema.
I would say that. I would think that as well. Yeah.
But it was actually pretty good. There's a lot of people around me that were saying...
Yeah.
So... That ruined it a little bit sometimes.
You think those...
we'll get into that.
They would be fans later. Of the film who's seeing it again or something?
No.
Oh,
like
okay.
When it started, then it's kind of a thing. But it was a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
I like sitting back alone and just being able to enjoy the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm quite scared of scary movies, so I have my hands like this a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, okay.
So I just see like part of the screen.
Yes.
Screen when the jump scares are coming, but this one does not have many of those.
No, it's actually using the fear more, the dread,
which is what we like in scary films.
It is. So that's also why I was very intrigued with this movie. There are several things I really enjoyed, but the style, I liked the way they used miniatures, and setting up like they had miniatures of the complete house, and you were never quite sure if you were watching a miniature version or the actual version because they had done them so well. I think that was it set the stage for this to be very surreal, and you never knew what was real and what wasn't.
It really played it up as well,
kind
of dollhouse thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of placed the camera often a little bit away from how would you usually be.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So they played that up, and it was fun to see.
You know, when I watched the trailer for this movie, I was thinking this is going to be such a gimmick that they have dolls houses. And like the use of dolls in horror films are always just a bit creepy
mm-hmm.
and a bit like overused. But this actually works so well because Toni Collette's character was so well drawn. You know.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Yes, I think we have a point where we need to discuss.
Okay.
That was one of the drawbacks for me because it has a few drawbacks, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I believe our rating is the same.
Yes, it is. 3.5 stars.
Yeah. I thought Collette's character, as experienced as she is and as good as she is, mm-hmm. and I really like her. As I've said many times on this show.
Yes.
Especially like Muriel's wedding. Yes. Again and again I say that. But I thought it was a little weird. I thought she was a little weird.
You thought she was a little bit weird?
Throughout, yeah. I thought mm-hmm. the acting was a little bit over the top at times.
Yeah.
And I put that squarely at the feet of the director. This is his first feature.
Mm-hmm.
And because I wouldn't say anything bad about Toni Collette.
No. So you're just saying stuff bad about the director instead. Yeah.
Not bad. I mean, this is his first film and he's doing great. I mean,
it's
a good film.
It's unnerving. I think her character is very well drawn out, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I I agree with you that she's going a little bit over the top sometimes, especially during the latter half. But I actually really, like, I understood where her emotions came from, like this frustration and, you know, how she just couldn't contain everything that was going on in her head, how she tried to make sense of everything. And sometimes she went completely off the handle. Well, very few times, actually. But I think she did it very well. It was it wasn't something that took me out of the movie.
There you go.
You know?
You got that in. Out of the mm-hmm. movie. Okay.
Yeah. That was not the thing that took me out of the movie.
She has a counter balance in Gabriel Byrne. Always nice to see him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he is exactly that. It's just absolutely her, counteract.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, just the straight man.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, like, trying to keep her feet on the ground.
Yeah.
Well, she's a little bit like him in some ways. I mean, he's also this skeptic. He's just like factual,
mm-hmm.
Like taking things at face value, which she is trying to do through her art with creating miniatures of every family encounter, basically, that she has. I think that's such a like an interesting angle on this story, that they're actually pretty similar. Like he's coming in to see how it goes with her work doing these miniature diaphragms, is it called?
Diagrams, maybe?
No, I have the word here. It's not a word I use very often. but anyway, like miniature houses, and it seems like they actually share a way of looking at life, this very factual way of looking at situations. And later in the movie, you realize that she's really using this craft in order to make sense of things, like keep herself sane, because there's a lot of other stuff going on in her head.
Yeah.
Right?
I think maybe the premise is very good. The mm-hmm. idea is very good. That's not the drawback. I like the whole miniature thing as well.
Yeah. Mm. Did you like the sound work? Did you notice anything in particular?
I thought it didn't bother me at all.
No.
No.
See, that's good.
Yeah. You agree with that, or
I'm like right in the beginning, they're really drawing a lot on the horror tropes mm-hmm. with some strings and like unnerving music. But I think actually after those first, like the introduction scene, really, the music is pretty good. And the use of sound is very well done.
Not excessive.
I feel like the soundscape is just very loud all the time. So it seems like every very small sound is being amplified a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have that hiss all the time as if you're really engaged in the sound.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that.
Good.
It was something I noticed.
I didn't even write anything down about the sound.
No?
No. So
that's usually good. That's
something. Usually that's good, yeah. I noticed that, well, coming off something like It, which we like tore apart on the show.
Yes.
This was less is more type of film,
mm-hmm.
and therefore much better.
You know, I just found an interview from NPR, actually, with Ari Aster, where he said that he actually was more interested in making a family drama
mm-hmm.
rather than a horror film. So that was his first goal. And like to make a movie about a dysfunctional family. And you know, I really agree with that. And to a certain extent, I would say he should have stuck with that and just make it about a family grieving.
That would have
and how they,
been yeah. interesting.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't fill seats.
No.
No.
It wouldn't.
I really like how he kind of builds this uneasy feeling. It really starts in the beginning and it just lingers all the way through. That being said, I thought the build-up was too long. I thought it was a little bit too long. Although it's good and it's bad. I like the way people take time with things. But it might have to do, have something to do with the fact that I was in an Icelandic cinema, which is not be a part, which is not be a part of this, which means they had a break.
Yes.
And just when the break happened, there was you had a feeling that nothing had happened in the film after in an hour's time, nothing had gone on really. Well, except someone getting beheaded, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when was the break here?
I forget, but I think it was about an hour mark.
Yeah.
And it's over 2 hours.
Yeah, it's 2:05 or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
yeah, but
did you think it was too long? Do you think it was as long as
I looked
should
at my watch a few times, but I don't think it was because it was too long necessarily. I started being a little bit bored with where it was heading because I had thought they would play this as a more suspense thing. I thought they were going more into the head of the mother, you know, Toni Collette's character. And there's some brilliant, brilliant scenes, I think, in the first half where she's talking about her sleepwalking and doing something like waking up, being just about to do something horrible to her kids.
Yeah.
And and that just sets up this whole like
a different, like, yeah.
It's as if you can't take anything that she's saying for like as true facts anymore, like because she just it's always her words against what everyone else is seeing,
yeah.
You know,
I guess,
and it makes the whole thing even more weird and surreal. In a way, everything takes place in her head, and then she has a sleepwalking incident inside a dream. Like it's very far down this incident, and you know that it's part of her emotions. It's what like how she's dealing with grief. She's blaming her son for the death of her daughter, and therefore she's doing really horrible things to him in her sleep, but sometimes she's actually doing them in real life, or like she's in the room doing something but she has no memory of it. So it has this very like mental, like psychotic angle to it, and I think
they should have
been extremely cool if they had gone all the way with that angle.
I agree, but that relates to how it ends up, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. That would have been a smarter route to take for me.
Yeah, because then it just becomes this like traditional horror. Well, satanic panic thing. I don't know if that's a word or anything, but it's, I don't know.
Yeah,
it becomes more constructed in that way, and it seems like the whole conclusion just starts to feel silly to me, because everything else up to that point where you like could interpret everything that happens in many different ways. And then all of a sudden you can't.
True. I thought after the break, after halfway and towards the end, it got really suspenseful. And I was hiding my, hiding, a little bit. Because
hiding your eyes?
Yes, yeah. We had this horrible jump scare, which I kind of didn't see because I had my hands before my eyes and just saw tiny portions of the screen.
Yeah.
But that scene was, I thought, very good. Many of the scenes in Peter's room were very good. There's so much dread going on there.
Yes. I think whenever you saw some of the dead characters in a very, very dark place where it was as if they were part of the furniture, but then they were not.
Towards the very end, yeah.
Yeah, but also in the beginning with her mother, the grandmother who passes away in the beginning. Actually, before the movie starts, she passed away. And then she appears in a vision, or like she doesn't know if she's seeing her. And I think that was just, I mean, hair raising, you know. It my hair stood up, because they also keep it for such a long time, so you can look at the frame, you can try to make out where is this weird thing in the picture I need to see now, and then they're just staring directly at you, and it's creepy.
And they do that again and again. Just they make you find in the background what you should be afraid of, and it really scares. Well, it just scared me.
Yeah, and they are in plain sight.
They're in plain sight. That's the brilliance of it.
Yeah. So I think not to bring David Lynch into this, he does the same thing. It's the same kind of dread.
Yeah.
You know, where you just keep the frame at a subject until you get, like, for such a long time that you get scared from it, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's great.
The door and Killer Bob and was the scene I keep mentioning, and what was it called? I forget. The movie about
Firewalk
with Me. Yeah, I keep going back to that for the ultimate kind of experience in terror.
Yeah.
But many, many good scenes for me, specifically in Peter's room mostly, and just the final third I felt was very good, horror wise. But
okay,
I want to mention this actress Millie Shapiro. She plays a 13-year-old girl. I don't know how old she is, but she's really made for horror films, isn't she? This is how she looks. Yeah.
She has the look.
She has the look. She will appear in more, shall we say.
Yeah, yeah. It's sad that she'll get typecasted in that way.
Hopefully it won't happen. Hopefully she can do something else as well.
But she has a different look.
Very distinct face. And it really, it's kind of scary. She's kind of scary. Yeah, when she's made up like she's in this film.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Anne Dowd, the person she meets, Toni Collette meets, she's just very good. She's always been very good. Yeah. She's one of those people you don't really notice the name and.
Exactly.
She's somewhere, and she's always very, very good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she was pretty good as well.
Yeah. Such a pro.
And even though she's the one, like, initiating the whole act that I didn't really like.
Yeah.
I think still her character could be, like, explained away, you know, as part of the mother, you know, Toni Collette's character.
Yeah.
You know, because it's only her who actually sees her. So,
Let's talk about the real problem with this. And I see it as a real problem. I was thinking
I'm excited.
I was thinking about giving it 3 out of 5, but I think it would be unfair because there are so many good things here.
I have been so... It's been so hard for me to actually rate this movie, because had it not, like for me at least, been for the third act, if they had gone a different place, mm-hmm. this would have been up there. You know, it was very good.
But then maybe they would have missed all this really scary horror stuff.
But do you need it? You know, what I was...
you need it for this type of thing, you know?
For the most of this movie, I was thinking of The Babadook.
Yeah.
I really was, because it's been, like, compared to it. I watched The Babadook. I really liked that one. Because everything... Like, it becomes tangible. There is a monster in The Babadook, but it might not really be there. It might still just be a family monster,
mm-hmm.
you know? Something you keep in the basement.
Family monster.
Metaphorically speaking, yes. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, but when horror movies... go to a very concrete plane all of a sudden where you can't really explain a way that it could happen in any other way than this weird, there was a monster, then it becomes much less horrifying to me, at least. And many times it undermines the whole movie, especially if everything has been set up in this other way where you could actually interpret it in several ways.
Mm-hmm.
And the feeling I'm left with at the end is that I've been cheated. I've been cheated for something. Like they haven't been completely honest with me. If they really wanted to tell this story that they want to in Hereditary, why not let us know a little bit more about the grandmother before the movie starts, so you don't have to guess about all this stuff, and just give it to us, and then we can figure out all the small signs in this family, you know, like, because it seems like it's trying to be like Ari Aster actually wanted to make, like a family drama with a lot of stuff going on underneath, and then along the way, they just switch gears, and it's like, nah, it's this thing that's going on.
I don't know. If it were to end like it does end, you would have liked it to be set up and make it quite a different film.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Then it ended up being.
I think so. You know. I sent you a little clip the other day from a movie called Shaitan.
Yeah.
A movie I watched probably in 2006 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Which is about Satanism.
Okay.
Very blatantly. There are loads of goats in it. And there's a lot of eating meat with your mouth. And it has the... great, great Vincent Cassel.
Cassel, yes.
Yeah. As this Antichrist figure. It's quite amazing. He actually plays his own sister in that movie. Wow. Just to to whet your appetite for that one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's a great movie, but it was a blast watching it in the cinema in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not afraid to say this is clearly horror. It's about these like very, well, anti-Christian people. There was a lot of that going on everywhere. And it just rolled with it, you know?
Yeah, but at the same time, you could say that Aster is just stretching the format a little bit, changing it up, just... mixing it up a little bit. I mean, if you want to defend it, but I can't defend the ending.
No,
I can't do it.
I can't either.
You said you feel cheated. I feel cheated as well.
Yeah.
You don't need to explain every single thing. Just
no. because they could have ended it differently without specifically explaining it.
Absolutely. But still,
and you could still interpret it.
It's some kind of like an anti-climax there in the end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, and especially with the naked people.
Yes.
Like, it just seemed a little bit like, ah, oh, I want to be artistic or something. Just
the naked people play an important role up to that point.
Yes, up to that point. Mm-hmm. But not at that point.
Also, for me, a drawback is the whole spiritualism aspect mm-hmm. of it. Mm-hmm. Because I have problems with that crap. Mm,
you do.
Yeah. and somehow I'm more on board with a clown in a sewer than this crap, you know?
Yeah.
Somehow for horror genre, I kind of like that more. Even though it is bad. Bad. But
yeah.
And this is good.
You didn't find it unnerving with the glass scenes when they were summoning?
Not really.
No.
I thought most of the good scenes were in Peter's room.
Okay.
But
I was always a bit unnerved with that, but it's because it's the unknown. It's like, what it could, like, something might happen here. But you know, it's I didn't take it at face value when I watched it. I thought it was brilliant how nobody saw anybody writing in Charlie's book, for instance. Charlie is her daughter's book, mm-hmm. you know? But all the pictures in that was of Peter and him getting killed, basically. But the only one who saw it happen was the mother.
Mm-hmm.
So you always get like these ideas that she's doing all these things.
Yeah, that's the hope. Yeah,
and that's the whole premise. That's why it's so brilliant, the film. And then they go, like, they end up ruining everything.
Yeah,
you know,
you could say brilliant, but major flaws.
Major flaw.
Mm-hmm.
They should have stuck to their guns and not gone the whole horror film. I mean, it turned into, I haven't seen these Korean films, The Ring and The Grudge and all those.
I saw The Ring, that was scary. Yeah. Shit.
Exactly. And there's like characters jumping around and moving like that, and
the kind of stop towards motion
the
movie.
End, yeah, and towards the end in this movie, it turns into that kind of thing. A little bit, where I'm thinking that style. Like,
maybe a tiny bit, but I disagree a little bit there.
Okay.
And I also disagree that he should have done a family drama. I think he should just have...
He did, though.
Yeah. Yes. But he did a horror film as well. Yeah. I like the horror aspect of it. I just don't like the whole how
spiritualism.
Yeah, spiritual stuff and the whole over explanation of things.
Yeah, yeah.
It ruins it a little bit, but mm-hmm. I will say a good film overall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would say that too. And I think it's so well crafted. It's so well put together. Toni Collette does a great job with this role, I think.
Okay.
I was on board with it. I love to see her frustration and how she balanced that and was confronted with her grief, really. And she couldn't, like, you knew where she was coming from. At least you knew what she was thinking all the time, because she explicitly said so, but you never knew what was real and what wasn't, you know?
Again,
that was great.
I must just say that it feels like the director's a little bit over his head with Toni Collette, because she's in many, many scenes, and she's the main character,
mm-hmm.
of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that could have been done better, but the cast as a whole was good. Gabriel Byrne and Dowd, the kids.
Yeah. I like seeing Gabriel Byrne.
And most of Toni Collette's scenes were really good.
Yeah. Which one in particular?
When she was asking Gabriel Byrne to throw the book in the fire for one.
Yeah.
That was annoying. It didn't feel right at all.
She was at her wit's end at that moment.
It didn't feel right. I go by feeling here. I'm just going by feeling. It didn't feel right for me.
But it was at the breaking point, if you would look at her character. Like, it was really the breaking point where she snaps completely. I think it felt right in that sense.
Then we disagree. That's a rare thing. That's a good thing as well.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're a person who are more into the whole, you know, like traditional horror film, but don't mind a bit of suspense and dread, then this is really up your alley, right?
Sure. It takes its time. It takes its sweet time getting there.
It does. That's why there's so much good stuff in this movie, because it's just...
Yeah, dread. I don't think it would have suffered at all with like 20 minutes less. I don't think so.
Well, they could have just cut out the third act.
Yeah.
And then it would have been a much better movie.
Okay.
Then it would have gotten probably a whole star more from me.
Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm old school. So, I like horror. So the third act was the shit. Mm-hmm. Except for the crap in the end.
So, like, one fun fact here at the end.
Okay.
Would you care to you know, guess what the title in Danish is? They changed the title.
No. I can't imagine.
Ondskabens Hus. House of Evil.
House of Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And
they couldn't just say Hereditary.
No. Well, it's also called that, but then it says Hereditary, Ondskabens Hus. And they're riffing on The Shining, which in Denmark has always been called Ondskabens Hotel.
Ah.
Like the evil hotel of evil.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which undermines the whole plot of The Shining, which is about this thing that people have, like The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
I never understood what actually happened when I saw it as a kid, because I thought it was just like an evil hotel, but it's The Shining.
We're back to the Danish film authorities, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
There's nothing we can do about that.
No.
No.
Not yet.
Not yet.
We're not big enough.
We'll see.
Maybe at some point we can.
Maybe. We're getting there.
Do something. Yeah. All right, so but you had a great time at the cinema watching.
We had a good night.
Except for you didn't watch.
It's
half
absolutely
of the movie.
Worth the ticket.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I think so too. Like, for the most part.
Yeah.
If you don't care about feeling cheated at the end.
Okay.
We're done. Okay, let's talk.
Okay, so what are we thinking for next time? Is there anything on the horizon?
Right now, I'm not sure, but I just saw that Ozark is coming, the second season.
Yeah,
and on Netflix.
We never talked about the first one.
No. Maybe we could do a double feature, taking the whole thing. Probably sometime in September. It's opening the 31st of August.
You did see the first season? Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, and you were excited?
Yeah.
I remember telling you about it.
I know. And we watched it after France last year, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Or, it was good.
Or was it you that told me about it?
I think I saw something about it on Reddit that we should actually try and watch that. And
it's good.
His name escapes me right now. The guy,
yeah,
from Arrested Development.
Jason Bateman.
Yeah. He is good.
He is good.
And watching Ozark the first season, I was I gave him much more credit. I'm giving him much more credit for everything he does now.
Yeah.
Because that was good. He was producing it. I think he was directing some of it.
Yeah. It was his pet project, I think.
Yeah. And he's doing a great job acting it. And, you know, yeah. I'm actually... The weird thing is that I'm not extremely excited about what are they going to do with Ozark Season 2. But... The first one was a very good season, and I'm just like, I really want to watch the next one.
And it has Laura Linney. That's
and
always
Laura
good
Laura Linney. Yeah, exactly.
So that's exciting. But
all
that's
the people
not
who have
time.
Been Frasier's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Patrick Clark, Patricia Clarkson, and Laura Linney.
Yeah, some good stuff coming out of Frasier.
Yeah. Yeah. So that one. I'm looking forward to, and then we have Disenchantment, also the TV thing,
so
animation, Matt Groening.
Nothing on the horizon in the movies. We'll see.
Movies.
We'll
there,
see.
There are some stuff, but you know, I can't think anymore.
Mm. Long day. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Long day.
We'll figure something out. Maybe something from the back catalog. That'd be good. That's always fun.
Yeah. It's good to take it a little bit easy here in the summertime, right?
Yes.
We could also catch up with some of the summer blockbusters.
Yeah.
Or Infinity War.
Yeah, that'd be fun. It's weird. Yeah, we shouldn't really... It sounds weird when an Icelandic guy and Danish guy just complain about the weather all the time.
Yeah.
We need to take it easy in the summertime.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We should just like stay inside, watch a Netflix film,
yeah,
something like that. Yeah,
we'll see what happens next time, but I think this is it for now.
It is.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back
in
2 weeks.
That was the 50th show.
Yes, number 50, 50, the big 50.
Yeah,
you were there.
You were there to witness it.
Yeah. All right.
Witness me.
Until next time.
All right.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Whenever you're ready, man. Just go for it.
Okay. Welcome to the 50th episode of The Conversation, a Nordic Film Podcast. This is the 50th episode, and we will be tackling Hereditary, which has gotten a lot of buzz lately.
Can I stop you there? Can I stop you right there?
Yeah.
Because you said, welcome to the 50th, and the next sentence was, this is the 50th.
Yes. It is the 50th.
Yeah.
It was to underline, this is the 50th.
It felt a little weird, so I just decided to stop you right there, if you don't mind.
Well, I will refrain from saying 50th twice then.